right now at a kind of living system perspective, this is a disruption. The energy, the resources, the structures that we're relying on, that we counted on every day to just be there, have been changed. As I search for answers with the lens that I have and the worldview that I look to, I go to nature. When you get past the death and destruction, or not get past it, but honor that, I think we're going to look back on 2020 and say, that was a period of creativity and deepening spirituality because everything's changing.
Hey, I'm here with Daniel Lossi today, who is the partner and chief century thinker with the Virtus Group, a company dedicated to environmental sustainability, helping a lot of different firms around the country, both for-profit and non-profit, have a bit greener footprint on the earth. Daniel will be offering us some surprising insight about how living systems can show us the way to creativity and resilience through a global pandemic. After the interview, I'll also be tacking on a brief reflection I made to my congregation in Omaha, Nebraska last Sunday about how Jesus himself looked to living systems for insight into how God helps us through times of struggle with creativity and resilience. The Converging Paths podcast is sponsored by Darkwood Brew at darkwoodbrew.org. Right now, Darkwood Brew is opening up its entire library of 28 different series on progressive Christianity, featuring over 120 different leaders from around the world for personal study or small group reflection. It's opening up its entire library for free. Normally, there's a substantial subscription cost, but because of the pandemic, they wanted to do a lot of good for a lot of people rather than a lot of good for a few people. If you have to be a congregational leader, your entire congregation can have a subscription to Darkwood Brew right now and for the next 60 days or so while we go through this global pandemic together. Get your free subscription now at darkwoodbrew.org. And now, Daniel Lossi. Daniel, what is a chief century thinker?
That title comes from the seven generations thinking that the decisions that we make today, we should take into account seven generations to the future. And if you do the math, that's about 150 years. And it's a title that I gave myself to keep me honest and to keep me focused on that long-term thinking, because it's a core proponent of sustainability and resiliency. So it helps me remember that the decisions that we're making in our family, with our clients at work, in my community, are always kind of put to this test of what is it for a century out or a couple centuries out, that seventh generation.
We're, of course, in the middle of a global pandemic. I would just love to know what this looks like through your lens, through the lens of somebody who thinks deeply about the environment and our impact on it and its impact on us.
COVID-19 really is a global pandemic that's a global tragedy. And it's at a scale that most of us, if any of us, have never experienced. As I search for answers with the lens that I have and the worldview that I look to, I go to nature. I mean, nature is the longest running R&D laboratory on the planet. It has faced disruption countless times over the last 3.8 billion years. And so I start to ask the question, how does a living system interact with disruption? How does it manage disruption? There's a couple key concepts from living systems that I think are really relevant. One of them is this rapid learning. And in the times of COVID-19, we have had massive learning. Some of us haven't learned the lessons yet. Some of us are still learning. There are things that we're going to continue learning for months and years after this, but we have to keep trying things. And as we try things and experiment, whether it's just with our family unit or with our work or with our clients or with our community and supporting them, we keep the things that work and we let go of the things that don't. Nature is really good at not taking things personally. Mm-hmm. Slime mold is one of my favorite examples of this rapid learning thing. And it goes and it branches out in all these different directions. And if it finds food, it continues to put energy and resources to go get the food because that's what sustains it. And if it branches out and it doesn't find food, well, that branch retracts and redirects the energy to a new place to discover or search for food. And so how can we in this time of COVID be like slime mold and quickly branch out, try things, and then let go of them and do so with compassion because there's a lot of stigma around failure, especially in our Western society, right? I don't want to make a mistake. I might get fired. People won't like me. I want to be loved. But we have to have compassion with ourselves because that's how nature does it. That's how we learn. We try things, we fail, and then we try a new thing. Mm-hmm. And if we get stuck in the failure, we get stuck in a trap. So this compassion piece overlaid this rapid learning, this rapid acceleration is really critical, whether it's how you interact with meat and your diet and what you're changing for an environmental footprint, or whether it's a business who for 5 years had conversations about work from home policies, and then COVID happened, and between Friday afternoon and Sunday night, 48 hours, they had a work from home policy, and everybody was working from home come Monday. And they're probably going to adapt that because people are learning how to work from home and they're finding out what works and what doesn't. Another rapid learning that people are figuring out right now that requires a lot of compassion is homeschooling. I'm in conversations with a lot of parents who have kids at home right now, and they're like, how do we continue to maintain this this learning environment for our children when I still have to work? Now I'm a child care provider because daycares are closed, or I'm not sending my kids because of shelter or stay at home. And now I have to teach them things. So how do I learn rapidly? And one of the rapid learnings that's even happened in the last 2 weeks, like, calm down, take a break.
That's right.
And breathe.
And certainly,
and have compassion.
Yes. And certainly you're recommending they listen to episode 28 of my Converging Paths podcast, How to Homeschool Your Children During a Pandemic Without Going Crazy, right?
That's exactly what I was pointing to. Yeah.
I thought so.
And I'm guessing that some of those lessons in that episode really are using this rapid learning. You try things out, you keep doing what works, you let go of what doesn't work, and you have compassion with yourself and your children.
You got to. Yeah. I kind of think of this whole pandemic. I mean, you rightly acknowledge the tragedy side of it. And I think every positive thing you say about the pandemic, you have to start by saying, but if you can turn down the real lived experience of people right now, that it's horrifying and throwing us all into seasons of uncertainty or financial loss and so forth. Part of what I see in this, you know, the kind of the 30,000 foot level is this pandemic is kind of like this massive incubator right now, both for sustainability and for spirituality, both. And that we're kind of as an organic system kind of doing that slime mold thing, you know, trying this, trying that, trying another thing, and seeing what the new normal can settle into.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot. And I almost feel like this is a societal artificial winter, right? So going back to what is happening right now at a kind of living system perspective, this is a disruption. Systems have disruptions all the time. And what happens in a disruption is the energy, the resources, the structures that we're relying on, that we counted on every day to just be there, have been changed. The rules of the game have changed. And we still have this functional, essential need for providing for our families, connecting with our communities, worshiping, going, learning and schooling. And so in winter's a good example where it's not an abrupt change in resources. The forest fire might be more applicable, but in winter, external resources go away, right? The sunlight goes down, there's not rain. I'm thinking of the Midwestern winters, right, where we actually have the seasons and snow, and trees become dormant. And they don't die. They reinvest all of that energy that had been going on in spring and summer, and they put it back into itself, building root systems, getting ready so that when spring comes, it's ready to bloom and grow and blossom and bear fruit. So I'm looking at this as part of the wisdom of nature, is that change is the only constant thing in life. And there's this beautiful adaptive cycle where you create these structures that work, and then there's a disruption, and that disruption releases all of this energy and this structure and these resources to create something new. It's filled with opportunity. Just as you said, this is a beautiful space when we get past the death and destruction, or not get past it, but honor that. I think we're going to look back on 2020 and say, that was a period of creativity and deepening spirituality, because everything's changing. And people who weren't exercising are now able to because they're working from home, and they're creating new systems and structures and schedules, and they're trying things out that are life-giving for them. and they're under a lot of stress. And so they're trying to figure out, how do I deal with this stress? And my meditation practice has accelerated since all of this, because the demand is there. I'm like, I really need to. So my internal motivation is there, and the external space and schedule has shifted that made more space for me to really invest more into this practice.
Yeah.
So this adaptive cycle is another one of these key concepts that living systems can teach us, that as you have the structured place, a disruption comes in, and it can be abrupt or it can be subtle, and it frees up time, energy, resources. Money is shifting in our economy. It's going away in some places. And if you're a soap dispenser or a hand sanitizer company, it's going through the roof, and people have this demand. And so how are these shifting resources going to impact us? What innovations and creativities and opportunities are we going to see as we round this curve of the disruption into the opportunity space, into the questions of what is new? What is new and surprising that is beneficial because of this? Mm-hmm. And what are the things that I've been forced to let go of, or that I'm still holding on to that I really should let go of, that's causing undue stress? You know, talking realistically just with my team at work, we're asking them every day of the work week, you know, checking in, how are you feeling? What's going on? What's working for you working from home? What is it that we need to change as a team? What mental frameworks and expectations do we have? Like, you're not going to work 8 to 5 if you have kids at home. You might be working 5 to 9 and 10 to noon, or I don't know, during nap times or after the kids are in bed or before they wake up. And we'll still adapt our form, the schedule, to meet the function of being a team, supporting the people that we care about with our clients. And even that is changing. Like, should we expect 40 hours a week with all these other pressures? And we're having discussions about, you know, what happens if we just acknowledge, let's just name it. I'm not as productive when I'm working from home and I'm homeschooling and I'm doing childcare so my wife can work, and I'm trying to put in a 40-hour week. My productivity has dropped. So what is the productivity drop? And let's honor it and acknowledge it and stop trying to be the same level of productivity as we were before. Hmm. For me personally, one of our big clients is an airport, and their traffic has dropped 85%. And they said, we love sustainability, but we have to pause this project. We are stopping all external contracts for a period of time, which, oh my gosh, first is like, oh crap, revenue stream, small business, can we handle this blow? And then it's like, okay, breathe. It's going to be okay. These are our partners. How can we support you? Even if you're not paying us, let me be a thinking partner for you. And they might take us up on it. They might not. And then my mind went to, okay, now I don't have to spend all these hours this week or this month working on this project. What space do I have in my life to think about the living system's impact on COVID-19? Mm-hmm. Have conversations with you, Eric, writing more blogs, doing strategic investments in our team. We have a list going right now of what are the ways that we can invest in our team right now, much like trees invest during winter, so that as things return to a new normal, because it's not going to look the same way it looked before, how can we be ready to grow and blossom and bloom because we're intentionally investing in ourselves now through professional development, online learning, reading, writing, creative thinking, brainstorms on Zoom about how do we reimagine how we're delivering our services? Are we delivering the right services? And the same thing applies at home. You know, what are the new schedules that are working? My kids are sleeping in later. They're waking up on their own, and I'm thinking, great, their bodies are telling them when to wake up. They're not waking up to an alarm anymore. And we still get done what we need to in a day with learning and, well, maybe not everything on my list, but they're still getting that learning time.
Maybe part of the learning is we have to give up on some of our lists too. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So this adaptive cycle is a really critical piece. And the key questions that I'd invite listeners to ask themselves are, what am I letting go of that I'm being forced to because of all of these rapid changes? What are the things I'm still holding on to that maybe I should let go of, or it would work well to let go of because it's causing undue stress and things have changed and I haven't changed my mindset? Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of that, like, what's surprising to you that has happened that, like, oh, this is a beautiful thing, or this is an opportunity? Because those things, if they haven't happened yet in your life, they will happen. You will be surprised by, oh, here's a new relationship that I'm investing more time in, and it's deepening and enriching. Oh, I'm spending more time in prayer and meditation, and my spiritual wellness is enhancing. And maybe I'm connecting with people from a distance that I didn't before, because everybody's at a distance now, and Zoom is an equal opportunity for anybody who has a computer and a camera.
Yeah.
So what are those surprising opportunities that are coming because structures and systems and energy and time has been shifted so dramatically with COVID?
Well, that's a great place to draw this to an end. Daniel, it's been a pleasure to be able to connect with you again. It's been a while since I've seen you. So this is another case where the virus is actually creating some benefit for me anyway. It's been too long since we've had a good conversation.
Yeah, we were supposed to connect for tea, but I guess we'll have to take a rain check on that, or we'll do tea over Zoom.
There we go. We'll have a tea party, a virtual tea party. Yeah. Yeah, and best wishes for your wife and Artemis Teas. I love her tea line. I hope more people find that in the mail order, because she definitely should be distributed far and wide.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to connect with you, Eric.
Now we're going to shift gears, although not as much as you might think, to a reflection I made on last Sunday with my congregation in Omaha, Countryside Community Church, in which I was trying to address a question that naturally occurs to many people if they believe in a higher power when bad things happen to people. Is, you know, what's the meaning of this? Did God cause this pandemic for some reason, or what? I try to shift that way of thinking following the lines of Jesus himself, who saw God not as the punishing God from on high judging us in our sin, although dealing with our brokenness and our fractured selves, but shifting the metaphor from God as punishing judge to gardener. By the way, for this part of the reflection, I was filming outside, and you'll begin to hear it rain gradually and get rather hard by the end. Let's have a listen.
Jesus was really making a fundamental shift to our understanding of who God is and how God works in this world. In his day, most people thought that when bad things happened, a plague, for instance, they would definitely have said, God is punishing us for our sins. And certainly in our society, we look around today, we have a lot of, we are way far away from reality. And that's one thing that we see as our financial plans, as our societal cohesion breaks down, we realize that we have been existing for a very long time quite apart from reality. The Bible would call that sin or alienation, right? But what Jesus is suggesting is that we do not look for the punishing God. We actually look for God who is more like a gardener. So if I just bought these plants from Lauritsen Gardens yesterday. They had a curbside pickup, a sale on ornamental kale and pansies and violas. And okay, I can't honestly tell you whether this is a pansy or a viola. I've kind of got a black thumb as a gardener. Don't email me, I'll figure this out. But anyway, think about the gardening. If I'm going to garden, I'm going to plant this flower in the ground. Kind of aerate its roots a little bit, get it in there. Now, let's say that this flower, which you can't see as well on your camera, but right there, let's say it stops, it's not growing as it should. Now, an angry, punishing God, would be like the gardener, would be like, bam, bad plant, right? But as a gardener, you don't do that. What gardener does that? A plant that fails to thrive, that's not producing what is intended, what do? Well, we read about this in the passage a few weeks ago about the fig tree that wasn't producing. You dig around it, you let some more water get into the soil, you may put some manure down or other fertilizer to give it some nutrients. That's what a gardener does. And Jesus is saying that this is the kind of God metaphor that needs to replace your old one. Not the one with the cosmic smite button in the air, but rather the gardener who says, listen, you aren't growing. You aren't producing the fruits that were intended for you. You're wilting on the vine. That's what we've been doing as a society in many, very, very many ways. So what is God doing? Well, I'm not going to suggest that God brought on this pandemic, but I would suggest we could find God in this pandemic, nurturing the roots, putting manure on the soil, getting some water there. We should be using this pandemic as an invitation by our Creator to get right with reality. And we're actually getting help in this pandemic. Look at all the things that have happened in just the last couple of weeks at our church alone. we're now networked by, into groups of 10 with people making calls regularly on these people to check in. We're establishing a fund that will that can help people in a time of need who are experiencing the worst of the financial crisis. Soon people will be giving to that fund and taking from it. We are keeping the pantry open, doing special ways to keep making sure the most vulnerable among us can still get the vital food they need. All everywhere you look right now at Countryside Church, not to mention elsewhere in society, you see these amazing, extraordinary acts of kindness and generosity. We're getting back to what's real, what really we should be doing always. My guess is that once the clouds kind of go over and it's starting to rain on me now. I'll have to make this short, lucky you. But when this blows over, this pandemic, I've really been thinking a lot about one of our members and what he said to me a week or so ago. He said, you know, we might just find so many deeply real values that we've been away from that when the pandemic blows over, we're going to feel like the slaves having, you know, been out in the wilderness, like, we don't want to go back there anymore, to Egypt. Let's keep moving. Like, we don't want to go back to the way we have been. We want to let this pandemic true us up into right relationship with reality. Find those human values, those values of community, those values that truly look to those inward gifts that bring us together, as opposed to the outward gifts and temptations that separate us. You can lose your bank account, you can lose your house, you can even lose your life. But whatever love you gain, whatever kindness you receive or give, that can never be taken away from you. I encourage you, and I encourage myself, because I'm not perfect at this, to simply take a few breaths during this time of quarantined and where we can't go out rushing around all of creation, doing everything under the sun. And we really consider the gifts that are around us, those inward values that are responding to God's invitation to come out and be manifest. That's what this pandemic does. It's creating a lot of havoc, a lot of true pain for many, many people. None of us are immune. But just like the rain, we don't want the rain all the time either. It's a hassle and it can cause problems. It can cause flooding. But let's also let the rain nourish our roots, nourish our community, nourish our hearts and souls, so that we emerge from this pandemic stronger than ever, finding that we truly do have treasure in heaven that is paying dividends in the now. Amen. Yikes.
Got a little wet there. And now let's let Nomalee Brennett play us out with her song, Dark Wood, a perfect song for finding courage and resilience in a global pandemic.
And the wilderness of days, stumble.